The Dawn of Another Life. William W. Eber, 1910. This book can be downloaded in Word format on ghostcircle.com/free_book/. The Dawn of Another Life. This book is wholly written by the Star Circle in full-form materializations through the mediumship of William W. Eber. This work is intended by us to be the promulgator of men's better instincts and nobler deeds. In this, our fourth book, we have set forth principles that will unravel mysteries of human existence as a whole. It is the setting up of a scientific explanation of what life really means and the elements of progress in the spirit world, giving to the world a realization of the highest and purest planes of life attainable in the future existence. William Denton, Preface. There is no system of religion or philosophy, no new theory or science that spiritualism does not embrace. It has obtained the foothold among men that no other religion or science has been able to reach in regard to a future life. Like other reformations, we have and are building such powerful auxiliaries to the success and growth of spiritualism that no force can disturb its progress. We hope to make this work plain and comprehensive to its readers. All of this and much more is now easily to be learned by anyone who will investigate and study the constantly increasing literature of spiritualism at the present day. The short, terse paragraphs and independent sentences contained in the three books, Rending the Veil, Beyond the Veil, and The Guiding Star, have given food to the hungry soul. This book will be entirely written by us, different than the other three books, being fully satisfied that the thoughts and expressions contained in this book will richly repay for the time consumed in their study, and that they will throw much needed light in what spiritualism is, and what spiritualists believe. This book is herewith presented to the public. Dr. Reed, Spiritual Advancement on the Earth Plane and How It May Be Attained, Dr. Reed. All have the germ of spirituality which is unfolded by compact with spirits. The better you make yourselves, the more will you attract to yourselves better elements of the spirit realm. All have spiritual development, but while some have fine spirituality, some have it very grossly developed so that it is very hard for them to develop their spiritual conditions. But whatever your spiritual unfoldment, there ever remains a latent spiritual force in order to draw out such forces to manifest itself. You throw or draw around you spiritual influences which quicken the latent energies into activity, thus developing spirituality, and as you invoke those who are on a higher plane by your own higher aspirations, higher spirits come into your sphere and better conditions inducing you to become better men and women. This is what is meant by mortals unfolding spirituality and the process of such unfoldment. But some, by their conduct, exhibit low conditions and thus attract about them spirits of low conditions producing manifestations of crude spirituality. For thousands of years there have been mediums reflecting the various conditions of spirituality that they have attracted about themselves from both sides of life, and some were unconscious of the causes of their varied conditions and did not know of them until death carried them into the spirit realm. When you try to live above the petty things which surround you in the physical life, and ever aspire to overcome them all, you unfold as the springtime, as the beautiful flower in its season. Pattern the sweet innocence of the prattling babe desiring to so live your allotted time on earth, then when your time comes, you lay aside the cares of that world, closing out that life as the tired babe sinks to rest in peaceful slumber you awaken to realize the beauty of this side of life. So friends, I wish I could so express to you the depth of this theme, that you could realize the power of unfoldment, could you so comprehend as to utilize to your highest advantage this great law, you would be able to pass to this side of life in glorious triumph over all low conditions. The character of a man's future, whether for good or ill, whether happy or otherwise, is in a great measure dependent upon himself, at least upon himself and his surroundings. Every man must work out his own salvation. He cannot cast upon others the responsibility which distinctively belongs to him of performing his every duty to the all-wise and infinite intelligence, to his neighbor and himself. The body is no more responsible for the evil it does than is the boat for the direction it takes through the water when steered by the helmsman, or driven by the wind. We say, let each man in society subordinate his selfhood to the general good, Make sincerity the law of social life, eliminate from toil its vulgarity, from mercantile life its dishonor, from the bench its corruption, from politics its selfish ambition, from the church its bigotry, from capital its greed, and etc. All of these are contrary to our code of ethics. Rise up, ye multitudes of earth, and cast away from your world its slimy garments of deceit and lying. Begin at once to believe in each other, let eye meet eye in holy truth, and you will surely find the God within yourselves. Nature in all her grandeur proves to mortals of earth daily how they should order their lives, in order to deserve even a few rays of her beautiful sunlight, or to pluck her laughing flowers. Oh, friends of earth, seek some high mountain top where above the clash and clamor of the greed of men you can teach your souls to speak with angels, and soon I know that you will discover you have been born again. And being born again, simply means the finding of God within you, through concentration of spiritual things, and through deep meditation of all that is beautiful and pure, a thorough comprehension of the great unwritten law. It means, in a word, your own personal spiritual advancement. Lay aside for a few hours the carking cares of homely toil that you may gain more food for your precious souls, if not so much for the flesh. For the flesh is perishable, and some day not long distant, it will effectually drop away, and leave that which is all of you, the spirit, to roam at will. And when that day comes, would you have your spirit self go out into its new life struggling in the bonds of ignorance and the mire of darkness? Such were pitiful conditions indeed. Rather had you better teach your spirit eyes to see a little glimpse at least of the after glory, train the inner ear to catch a few strains of those rapturous rhapsodies, music of immortality, than to let it go all untutored into the mysterious of the everlasting. Ours is the power handed down to us, to perfectly bestow upon any and every waiting heart the gift of true spirituality, without money and without price, so that you may indeed, when the time of your passing comes, have lain up for yourselves treasures to the realms of spirit. Out of the darkness of material greed shines forth the light of the celestial world when man daily fixes his inner thought on spiritual things. A constant concentration on the higher influences will at last send out into the atmosphere from you, wave motions or atomic vibrations which will be caught up by the ever-waiting bands of spirit and given to forces which are of like nature with your own, and in this way a friction or thought vibration is set up between you and your spirit band. Then after more or less of your strength, both physical and mental, is absorbed by the band. They utilize what they have gained from you in building a solid bridge of communication from our world to yours so that you may step thereon daily and receive gradually the intelligence they are longing to offer you, and at last you will conceive of the firm establishment of your personal unfoldment and spiritual advancement. As the magnet draws the steel, so does like attract like. Therefore if you wish to rest on the firm foundation builded of pure soul strength, strive each hour to fit yourselves for the personal audience of those in spirit who have already climbed the heights and are breathing the supreme atmosphere of perfect peace. No matter how much we desire such communication of intercourse of such quality, we shall never be able to receive it until we have brushed away all the debris and waste of our natures, leaving only that which is pure and inviolate for a dwelling place for those who have long passed the petty cares and jealousies of the lower conditions of existence and now dwell in constant hate of hate and love of love. The first opening of the real spiritual life of a person is like the tiny whispering of the birds in springtime, and the first promise of spiritual growth is like the first bursting of the tiny, fragrant wildflowers on the gleaming prairies. To first hear with the ear of the spirit is like the sweet far-off flute-like notes of the chiming of a silver bell. When a mortal has at last risen from the sluggard's couch of selfish aims and vain desires, and with a strong hand and noble purpose, shakes from himself forever the inclination to wound or tear the hearts of his fellow men, then and only then is he fit to receive the manifold blessings of the spirit. When you have reached a certain gradation of spiritual advancement, you will not be able to see any real sin existing in the universe. But all waywardness and straying will reach in your judgment its true level, and you will comprehend that the outgrowth of all things not spiritual are simply errors and the results of misdirected and undeveloped forces. Man's first impulse should be to first find and unfold within himself the very highest type of spirituality possible, Then the garnered fruits of our precious vineyards shall be his to have and to hold forever. There is a plane of spirituality which man can reach that daily and hourly gives him access to the communication with those in spirit who have been tried and found strong, who have been weighed in the balance and have not been found wanting. But for such intercourse a mortal must first make preparation by casting cut all selfishness, all vainglory, and the millions of other sentiments which go to make up a man's lower nature. You of earth, have it in your hands to set up such a communication with us or cast us away and out of your lives, where you cannot realize our presence, but where we shall ever wait in that background of untiring patience to be ready to come to you again. Our mission is to assist in the grand consummation, take away the sins so-called, and hurts of your world, and heal all the bleeding hearts, feeding with our ever-increasing knowledge the hungry and starving souls of your universe. When you of the mortal so steady your concentrative elements as to be able to know that it is far more terrifying to do without spiritual food than it is to do without food for the flesh, then you will begin to rise as a strong man girded for the race, and with the first rays of light in that new morning, you will be able to discern that lighthouse beacon which has guided so many thousands safely home. In coming back to earth to manifest the very first thing that was necessary for the promulgation of our mighty cause was to make men know and feel our everlasting presence, and the full reality of our identities before we could set about the glorious task of man's spiritual advancement and unfoldment. Gradually year on year of earthly time, have we worked our way into the hearts of mortals, until at the present, we have gained a foothold in your world that no united argument of man can crush, or that the heavy waterfall of the ages can wash away. As we have eternal life, so do we possess that greatest element of success, patience. Consider if you can, how long we have been trying to establish a settled communication from our world to yours, and then turn to your labors with a strong love and a renewed strength born of that spiritual energy of which men are only conscious when touched by that all-kindling fire of a living spirit within. There is so much for you to do, oh, friends of earth, that there is not one moment of your time to be wasted, not one instant to be cast into that sorry catalogue of lost hours. The material for your earthly and also your heavenly homes is here in our hands waiting to be purchased, without money, but certainly with the free expenditure of your soul's value. There is but one way for this purchase, and that way leads through the garden of truth, the lane of mercy, the city of righteousness, and the gates of eternal love for your fellow brothers and sisters. Picture your image in the clear stream of God's water and strive to make your lives as transparent, and extend the cause of spiritualism throughout your world. Many who have read the books Rending the Veil and The Guiding Star think and expect to obtain the same results with any medium they may meet and, of course, are doomed to disappointment. There are, however, many more in your country who, if they choose, corroborate these experiences if they would make them known. In public audiences there is almost always some antagonistic element to overcome, and the forces exerted for that purpose weakens the medium and lessens the effect given. If perfect harmony could be assured, the results would be grandly convincing if the medium's condition was in accord. Mental troubles and anxieties often cause a nervous state of unquiet that militates against success, and this should be avoided if possible by a state of passivity not always at command. Well do we know with what incredulous shakes of the head this information will be received. But remember, the spirit world has given promise of more wonderful things to be given for the closing years of this century and in the beginning of the next than have hitherto been shown to the children of earth, and many of the events already transpired, and are now in progress, and mechanical forces are the impressions received by sensitives who have given them for the benefit of the world, and more are to follow. The long-attempted problem of successful aerial navigation, once known and afterward lost, when that people to whom it was familiar, went down in that convulsion of nature, which changed the surface of the globe, will be successful. We mean the continent of Atlantis, and in the shock which followed, so many of the arts were lost. This is now nearing practical application. And very recently, it has been discovered that among a nation, or rather a fragment of a people considered as savage, the long-lost art of hardening copper, making it as hard as steel, has been found, kept as a secret handed down from remote ancestors to verify our predictions. Our philosophy is progressing with the intelligences of the age. Orthodoxy is becoming alarmed at its progress, threatening the annihilation of creeds, and undermining what they call Christianity. We see terror pervading the ranks of bigotry and superstition and note the desperate efforts making to check the cause of truth. The seceders from the old Church of Rome, which they hitherto denounced as a combination of bigotry, oppression and horror, are willing to embrace their hated foes and enlist under the banner, which they have hitherto called the emblem of hell, to try to crush out this growing power which threatens their overthrow. Their capacity and intelligence are shown by the leaders they have chosen, and their education and knowledge of the ordinary courtesies of life are made manifest by their language. To quote from one of their chosen ones, foremost in the effort they are going to make to crush out this delusion which is undermining Christianity, all mediums are frauds and liars. If you will do this, you will find yourselves growing more and more contented with your earthly lives and hence, find your enjoyment in the spiritual. For no mortal is able to really find peace until he is absolute master of, and knoweth himself, for then and only then, does he know God, and even so as a man cannot know God without a perfect knowledge of himself, neither can he be thorough in the knowledge of himself unless he also wisteth the perfect knowing power of God. These which must be united as a whole, for God is in all things, with all things and of all things, so as if we know them we must know also the infinite, for they are together as one law eternal and unerring. This state of knowledge will give mortals true happiness, for thereby they shall attain spiritual advancement, not otherwise known. Do you understand what true happiness is? It consists of making others happy, and in such far reachings of the soul, we find what rapture means. Just in proportion as you expand and develop, your wisdom increases. We never think of ourselves? No, never. We labor for others. Oh, if all of you people of earth could know what joy it is to live for the pleasure of others. But of course, we have the advantage. We do not have physical warts to look after. Society is such that it makes man selfish. Sometime the law of love will govern and completely envelop your world. It is the core of our mission to unfold the love principle in man. Every tiny rap is a wave of love from the sea of eternal life. A throb of warmth from angel hearts. Many persons find their good intentions misapplied, and they regret it. Your reward is sure. The moving of tables and rapping on the floors and walls of dwellings are of greater importance than is realized or understood by mortals. They are the musical beatings of the tide of an infinite sea, a sea bearing upon its bosom crafts laden with rich gems of immortal life, jewels from our beautiful land. The fabled valley of death is becoming a bright principle of glory set in the sky, lighting tip the dark pathways of man, and illuminating the lowlands of his mundane sphere. It is beautiful, it is lovely to climb the mountains and view our summerland. Some mortals may tell you we have no mountains, no grand rivers, no glorious nature with which to feast our spirit eyes. But they have no soil of love in their hearts with which to produce the beautiful tendrils of truth that grow at will in our celestial gardens, watered by the constant showers of self-sacrifice, and warmed by the steady outpour of true devotion. Spirits see nature, not through the sense, but through the spirit. We see the human mind and its spiritual aspirations before we see the human form. In this life, wherever our hearts are inclined, there is our home. We are not circumscribed in our journeyings, we are free, free as the birds that float through the air, free as the thoughts that come and go. Every glance of the eye, every clasp of the hand is understood. We have liberty, grand and glorious liberty. Make your lives pure and beautiful, gather the blossoms of sympathy and kindness, for sympathy for humanity is the fairest and sweetest blossom of the human soul, the destiny of man. Wesley Eber. As the ages of time glide away, as a dream that is dreamed floats away forever into the irrevocable past, we stand in mighty hosts and watch mortals in their daily ways, how they control their actions and order their lives. Mortal man in all the wanderings of his mind, is never satisfied with today, no matter how much he has accomplished or how great a good has come to him. He is ever looking ahead and sighing for the rising of tomorrow's sun, so that he can witness what it brings forth to him. So much he has laid out with mathematical precision, to perform and fully accomplish, that he cannot see the future unfold with a pace too swift. And this insatiate desire to do more, be more, and thus better himself and his loved ones, is as inborn within him as is the breath he breathes. This rising force is simply the result of progression, upon which is builded every element which mortals possess. No man can stand still in the face of the moving power of the universe. He either progresses or retrogrades, so that each act of a lifetime either points to one or another of these ways. And again, there are many of your world, and even of ours, who have fallen into darkened conditions on account of their own choice and the backward slipping of their own footsteps, when such environments at last have tended to awaken the better part of their natures, and seeing at last into what they had fallen, their condition served as a dear lesson to them, and they at once turned their faces toward the bright sun of knowledge, and the road of progression. When this is so, they are made the better and stronger men and women for it. The chain of man's destiny is wrought together link, by the strong hand of providence, as the smith welds together bits of burning red-hot iron, and as the fragments of his life join each with each, to make at last the real acts of his existence, so does his destiny begin to unfold itself, and lay out like a scroll to be read at will. The daily aspirations of the mortal mind that are the indwelling sentiments of the consciousness are the deeds in embryo that have birth, and at last form many links in destiny's chain. The inborn voice of the soul which speaks in various tongues and grows into principles which actuate the deeds of a man's life, whether good or bad, forms a part of his destiny. The tiny thoughts in embryo which take vital strength and grow into shape until they become things and take their places in the mortal existence as kindness and at last form the consummation of an earthly life. But does the output of man's inner consciousness from day to day find an end of occurrence with death? 10,000 times no. Just as he lays aside his earthly apparel, the flesh, and sinks down to rest in the evening of death, thinking his labors are finished, he scarcely loses consciousness in the last of mortal life, until his spirit eyes are looking on the light of the immortal morning, and he realizes with the fullness of his newly awakened spirit senses that his destiny was not finished on earth, but just begun. When we are near mortals of earth, we often hear one and another speaking of some person's destiny, and they usually interpret a destiny as meaning some one accomplishment or another, or refer to it as some business or vocation acquired by them in earth life, saying, "Oh, it was his destiny," or, "Well, she had to do her grand work, it is certainly her destiny." A man's destiny is his own precious gift from the Most High, and it accurately means the actual fulfillment of certain laws that abide for him and in his aura for the purpose of fixing his life on earth and in spirit spheres, just as it was originally intended to be. A great many of the first plans for mortal life and action that are not laid with accurate precision are never reached by persons for whose lives they were intended, for the simple reason that these persons are ever ready to neglect the impressions they daily receive and throw aside as imagination or chaff, the whispered words from spirit lips, whose messages are as signal lights along the pathway of truth, and as the guiding rays of a candle under the sheltered roof to the weary, travel-stained wanderer in the storm of darkness and ignorance. Instead of seeking to understand the governing motives of their lives, they turn their faces into the shabby and threadbare path of ignorance and failure, and then when the hand of death beckons them across the river and opens the gates of another existence, they wonder at their own seeming nothingness and failures, and are lost in amazement that they have not really tried to learn something of themselves long ago. How many, many of Earth's people today that do not realize the building or the completion of their own destinies. As man's real destiny builded day by day, as the years of his life unfold, so should man strive to crowd out of his nature all the petty follies of his earthly years and grow more and more in the image of God. Fix your minds, O mortals of Earth, on some of the high and mighty destinies of those who have left your Earth in a blaze of glory, as it were, and even as you have had the privilege to learn of them through contact with the love they have left behind, so should you order your lives, that in the law of eternal progress you could witness the upbuilding of a destiny for yourselves of which you need never be ashamed. The reason for a great deal of the hubbub and confusion of your world is because the mortal only strives to realize what is of necessity for his present wants, and tries not to build for himself a future monument of eternal peace. In the heavens the usual destiny that man sees is day after day of gaining the world's goods, so that when he grows old in the years of earth his prosperity he will find him fattened in worldly gain, and spiritual ignorance. The mortal who comes to realize that every happening which comes into his life is for the best, so long as he is living the principles which he feels to be right, is the man who is stepping on the high plane of progress and attainment of success in his each and every undertaking. Believe in yourselves or you will be the creatures of failure. If your friends believe in you, you will be a success, but the first element of your friends' trust imposed in you is your own self-confidence. Your daily acts, your thoughts, your beliefs, your prejudice, your loves, and hope and fears, all join together in the eternal and form link by link, the wonderful chain of your destiny. They are but the elements which help to make you what you finally are. How many there are in your world who are all unconsciously laying the cornerstones of their destinies today, putting in the foundation principles on which their whole lives are to rest. The multitude of men go on and on up the steep hill of earthly fortune and never stop to pick the thorns from their bleeding feet, that come as gentle reminders that their pace is too swift, but trudge tip and tip the steep incline of worldly prowess, until some day the hour of the eternal comes and they are called to the realms of spirits, to houses not made with hands, and find they then have nothing in keeping with this new life, only the change called death, and at this occurrence in their existence, when the last scale has fallen, and they are permitted full sight, they see at once that what would have been the greatest possibilities in their mortal destinies were completely left out and moreover alas never known. A mortal can understand only so much as his experience up to the present time has taught him. It is impossible for him to thread his way into paths unknown, for he cannot comprehend that which has never been his pleasure to be conscious of. If it were otherwise, how different would thousands and thousands of destinies be? Evolutionary unfoldment, Professor Michael Faraday. Out of the darkness of the real chaos and night, blazes forth the beacon light that illumines the boundaries of eternal space, and wheeling and circling through the trackless void for countless ages, the suns and systems proceed upon their course, obedient to the laws of balance that the tiny atoms of which they are composed, have imposed upon them. Go where they may, they never pass before the sphere of atomic forms, and do what they will, they are ever subject to that subtle but intangible power that directs and controls their movements with masterly vigor throughout the cycles of eternal being, whether in their evolutionary processes from the primitive fire mist, or during the periods when they bear the harvest of immortal satellites. They are within the province of the power which the atom has to enter or depart from a world or its inhabitants. The atom alone has the claim to enter a duration of form, it alone has the power to enter and dominate all other forms. It exercises this power without any master except force, and to force alone is it innate, or subject. Whether force possessed it as is contemporaneous with it may not be certainly assured by the wisdom of man, but probably force which impels the atom upon its course with unerring precision, may precede it in the province of creative evolution. It is possible that beyond the atom is an intelligence that has imbued it with these properties and powers. But if it is so much beyond the province of human mentality as to be outside the range of definite thought, it remains for human ignorance to be silent in its presence. If the world is a resultant of this intelligent creative power, then it becomes amenable to analysis, and possibly comprehensible by intelligence of the evolutionary type. For that only needs increase of mentality to raise the intellectual powers of man above the plane of directed force, and in that progressive evolution of intellect whereby the human race has already gained supremacy over numberless varieties, can it therefore be inferred that the nature of the atom is capable of comprehension by the human intellect, and is there in any expression of its powers, a clue to lead one to an intelligible explanation of its nature? In answering, we would say that the atom centers in itself the properties of all forms and conditions of existence. It is the central point from which all creative energy proceeds, and it is the basis of all power that manifests form or force. It is indestructible in its nature or properties, and it holds in itself the key to unlock the portals of eternal existence, for it is eternal by nature.